All right, so let's talk about what the hell anxiety is anyway. I found that even for people who are seasoned veterans of anxiety who have had it for quite a long time, they do benefit from a little refresher about what anxiety is, how it plays out in the body, and some distinctions between anxiety and other issues. And it can be confusing. You know, anxiety is a term that's used a lot nowadays. People will say, oh God, my anxiety is acting up, or this makes me feel anxious. And people use it in multiple different ways. And that's understandable because anxiety is both a feeling, it's an emotion that you can have, and it's also a class of mental disorders. You can have an anxiety disorder, and we can talk about it in a psychological sort of way. And both of those are valid. It's just a little confusing sometimes to know, am I feeling anxiety sometimes, or am I suffering from anxiety, sort of with a capital A? And so I want to break down exactly what those different things mean. First off, let's talk about the difference between anxiety and a couple other things, namely fear and stress. So fear and stress, I tend to group together because they're similar. Fear and stress are things where you have an external stimulus and it causes your reaction. There's a sort of obvious cause and effect relationship. Something happens in your environment and you feel fear or you feel stress about it. And so for instance, you know, maybe you're in a liquor store and it gets robbed. You have a fear that you're going to be hurt. You feel tension in your body. Maybe you feel a lot of the same physical characteristics that come along with anxiety, but there's an obvious stimulus that's causing that. And there's a good reason for it. You should be afraid in that situation. Or in some cases, maybe you feel stress. There are definitely kind of two different types of stress. There's good stress and bad stress. Technically, they're called eustress and de-stress, but you don't need to worry about that. The stress that you think of is more the de-stress part. And stress can be there when you have a test that's coming up for school, or there's a stressful situation at work. You have a lot of things on your plate and your time isn't really being managed well. That can cause you a sense of stress. And again, that can have similar sensations to anxiety. You may feel a feeling of tension, a feeling of apprehension. You may feel even physical sensations in your body that mimic anxiety. But again, there's that outside stressor that's causing it. That's different from anxiety. So anxiety is technically referring to that feeling of anticipation. Anxiety is about predicting that something is going to be stressful or fearful or dangerous, and that feeling of buildup, that feeling of anticipation, that feeling of worry, that feeling of stress and tension that comes along with that, right? Now, for an anxiety disorder, you can definitely have both stress or fear and anxiety. They both play a part there. For instance, maybe you had a situation where you were out in public and you were under a great deal of stress, or there was something that caused you fear. So say you went to the liquor store and it was robbed. That caused you a great sense of fear. Well, the next time you go into a liquor store, that thing that causes you fear may not be present, but that may generate anxiety because you know that you've been in that situation that caused fear in the past. And then that gives you this buildup of worry about, oh my God, what if that happens again? You know, I have that feeling like I did last time that I was there. But in this case with the anxiety, that actual immediate stressor isn't there. That thing is not in your environment. It's an unwarranted reaction that's based on something that may have happened before. And when I say anxiety is unwarranted, I don't mean that it's stupid or that you did something wrong by having anxiety. I just mean that the sensations that you feel are not consistent with what's going on. Like for instance, sitting here, I might feel a sense of anxiety because I'm staring into this little iris of this camera. Everything is set up to just focus all the attention on me. Maybe there are people walking outside looking in the window, and that might generate anxiety. That might generate a sense of fear, like I need to protect myself for some reason. But in reality, there's nothing dangerous going on here. There is no threat. There is nothing that should make me feel fearful or a great deal of stress because there's nothing bad happening here. I'm just here with a bunch of inanimate objects talking to this damn camera, right? But with anxiety, it does cause you to feel that sense of worry, that sense of tension, that sense of danger, even though it's not present. So that's what I mean by it being sort of unwarranted. With anxiety, sometimes it can be really hard to pin down what exactly is triggering the anxiety, what is causing you to feel anxious. And other times it's very obvious, right? For instance, if you have a phobia, you have a very clear, specific trigger. You know that needles or dogs or snakes or heights or whatever it is causes you anxiety, causes you that sense of apprehension, and it's very clearly identifiable. Other times, you know, you're sitting at your computer working late at night and you feel this rush of anxiety and you don't really know where the hell it came from. Both are valid experiences, and you know, sometimes it's just easier to put your finger on that trigger than other times. And there's also this thing that can happen where, you know, you get a little inkling of anxiety and then you get anxious about that anxiety and that works you up, which we are going to talk more about in a later section. Now, we talked about the distinction between fear or stress and anxiety. I want to make another distinction, which is one that a lot of people actually don't know about in my experience. People who know about anxiety, they may have not heard about this distinction, which is the difference between state and trait anxiety. Now, state anxiety is sort of what it sounds like. They're both really what they sound like. State anxiety is a temporary state of being anxious. This is when something happens or you're anticipating something and you have this heightened sense of anxiety. It's a temporary state of greater anxiety that you have to experience and sort of work through. That's usually what we're talking about when we say we feel anxious. Now, trait anxiety is a little different. Trait means that it's a part of who you are. So much like a good sense of humor or being charismatic, introverted, extroverted, whatever the case may be, your personality characteristics is what we're talking about here. So if you have a great deal of trait anxiety, this relates to how you understand the world. Anxiety is a trait that you have as a person, not just an experience that you have on a day-to-day basis, but fundamentally, when you look at the world, you sort of interpret it through a lens of anxiety. And I don't mean that you see everything as anxious, not everything is over the top necessarily, but maybe it means that you have just a little veneer of cautiousness or a little veneer of being more vigilant, a little bit more worried than other people. And that's just part of your experience and how you understand things that happen in the world. That's not necessarily a bad thing. That can actually do a lot for you. It can keep you safe in some instances. Now, if you have a high level of trait anxiety, you're also probably going to have a good amount of state anxiety. Both are often present in anxiety disorders. For instance, somebody who has a higher sensitivity to anxiety because it's a trait that they have is more likely going to go into situations that cause them that punctuated state anxiety, right? You see the interplay there? And interestingly, research shows that there are biological vulnerabilities that certain people have that make them more sensitive to anxiety in general. So I don't want you to beat yourself up about this if you think, okay, anxiety is a trait that I have, I'm never going to get rid of it. It's totally possible to have a high level of trait anxiety and still reduce those states of anxiety that you have and really remove the effect that anxiety has on your life. That's what we want to do here. I'm going to keep coming back to this point. We're not just trying to obliterate anxiety out of your life. We're trying to remove the grip that it has on you. And you can do that even if you do have a good amount of that trait anxiety there. And since I just talked about that biological vulnerability, let's dive into that a little bit more. Let's talk about the biology. Because some people say, oh, God, it's all in your head. You know, you don't need to be so stressed about this. Why are you making this a big deal in your head? And to that I say, no shit. Of course it is, right? Everything is in your head. Love, motivation, sorrow, pleasure, all of that is just different chemicals interacting in your brain. So duh, of course it's all in your head. But that doesn't make the experience any less real. That doesn't make it feel any less shitty to you. It doesn't make it any easier to deal with. It's not like, oh, okay, I realize that it's in my head, so now I can just turn that switch off. You would have done that already. That's why you're here taking this course, right? So of course it's all in your head, but it can help you to understand what exactly that does mean. How is it playing out in your head? Why is that important? State anxiety is really related to the fight or flight response. You've probably heard of that before, right? You learned about it in seventh grade biology or whatever, but the fight or flight response is an evolutionary adaptation in our bodies that's designed to help us stay safe. So when you're walking down the street and a car goes vroom and crosses right in front of you when you're trying to step out into the street and you have to leap out of the way really quick so you don't get killed, you're gonna have a certain reaction that happens in your body, and that's that fight or flight response. So, you know, when you think about it, what happens in those scenarios? Your pupils dilate, so they get bigger to let more light in to help with your visual acuity so you can see better. Your heart rate increases to pump blood to the important organs in your body that involve that sort of action. Your breathing increases, so the rate of your breathing increases to give more oxygen to your body. And the non-essential functions like digestion and things like that, those kind of go to the background. They shut off a little bit because they're not important for your immediate survival. And again, this is an evolutionary adaptation. You know, back when we were hunters and gatherers many, many, many years ago, when we were out on the plains, this is something that would help us stay safe. Like if we saw a bush that started wiggling, we would know that we need to react to that. And so we kick into high gear to see, okay, do I need to run from this? Do I need to kill this? Do I need to stay perfectly still so it walks by? It helps you make those moment-to-moment decisions and keep yourself safe. So, you know, in a way, the fight or flight response is something that developed to promote the continued progress of our genes and of our species. But right now, when you experience the fight or flight response when you're just sitting at your desk or going in the elevator or about to give a speech to your school, that's not helpful, and that doesn't actually keep you safe. Again, we're talking about that unwarranted response. So you have that sort of fight or flight reaction that doesn't have an immediate stressor that's causing it. In your body, there are a few areas of the brain that play a role in this fight or flight reaction. The first brain structure involved is called the amygdala. It's basically this little almond-shaped structure on the inside of your brain that serves as the alarm system of your brain. There's no complex thinking involved here. It's just an alarm that says, woo, 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 something's wrong, you need to figure this out, you need to panic, something's wrong. And from there, that warning sign from the amygdala gets sent to another structure, which is called the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus is basically the middleman between the amygdala and the other parts of your brain. So it takes that warning signal from the amygdala, and then in turn, it tells all the other parts of your brain to secrete the appropriate hormones or neurotransmitters to sort of kick you into action to keep you safe. Now, maybe you've been in school or work and you've had a fire drill. So we'll use the example of a school here. A fire drill is when the entire school pretends that there's a fire so that they can practice their safety protocols. Well, it makes a really good analogy for the fight or flight reaction in talking about these different brain structures. The fire alarm that initially signals danger is just like the amygdala. It isn't specific, it just says that there's something wrong. The fire alarm doesn't say, there's a fire in this specific area. It says, woo, 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 get the fuck out of there, right? So it says that something's wrong and that you need to take action. After that alarm rings, the teacher acts as a safety director and tells the students what actions they should take. They're not directly putting out the fire, but they're assigning roles, saying, you know, notify the authorities if necessary, guide everyone through that process. This is basically the role of the hypothalamus. The hypothalamus doesn't directly change anything. It doesn't put out the fire directly, but it tells the other parts of the brain what they need to do, what hormones they need to secrete, and things like that to kick your ass into gear. Then in the fire drill, the teacher will often assign roles to different students. So one person grabs the emergency pack, one student acts as the line leader, etc. And in your brain, the hypothalamus does the same thing. It barks orders at all the different structures, and it tells the adrenal glands to do something, the pituitary to do something, and all the things you need to do to make sure that everyone stays safe. And that's how you get those temporary superpowers that happen in a fight or flight reaction. So that's all I want to say about the biology for now. We'll touch on that a little bit during another section where we talk about the physical symptoms of anxiety and how to cope with those. But for now, that should give you a good idea about how the amygdala and hypothalamus sort of make this little circuit to give you that fight or flight response that kicks into gear when you have anxiety. I want to stress that anxiety is not the villain here. It actually can help you in a lot of ways. Like in the fight or flight response, that could keep you safe. It can keep your body away from harm. But in other situations, it can also help you out. For instance, let's say that you are in an abusive relationship or you have a chaotic household that you come from. Anxiety may be the thing that helps you stay alive in that scenario by making you more suspicious of your environment, by making you look more clearly and sort of question the motives of people, by making you be on edge and ready to react when you need to. So in that way, it can also do you a solid. And then later on in life, it sort of just overstays its welcome. It kicks into gear in situations where you don't have that threat that you used to have. So anxiety does not always come from a bad place. It's actually your friend in some cases. In other ways, it can motivate you. Like if you have a paper coming up, you need a certain amount of anxiety to kick you into gear. That's definitely how I got through college. I procrastinated until this point, and then anxiety kicks in and says, oh, you need to get that done, right? So anxiety is a good thing in some ways, but then again, it overstays its welcome, it comes into situations where it's not warranted, and it makes you feel terrible. But you're not here to make friends with anxiety. You're not here to sing its praises. You're here to move forward from it. You're here to move on and remove the strength that it has over you. So in the interest of doing that, I want you to repeat the following after me, or at least read along and just really internalize this, okay? Anxiety, thank you. I appreciate what you've done for me. I thank you for keeping me safe. I thank you for keeping me aware. But right now, I want you to fuck off. I'll let you know when I need you, but that will be on my terms. I'm taking the wheel now. I got this. So now you have a pretty good idea of what anxiety is and how it works. The next step is to learn a little bit more about your anxiety, to look at what level of anxiety you're experiencing and see what anxiety looks like for different people, what sort of different anxiety issues are out there. The idea here is not to self-diagnose. I don't want you to try to diagnose yourself, but I do want you to get an awareness of what different types of anxiety there are, what different anxiety disorders there are, so that you can understand better what parts of that line up with you, what maybe nails it right on the head, and which things you don't actually suffer from, and you know that that's not a big part of your experience. The whole point here is, again, to help you understand what your particular flavor of anxiety is, because that can help you in moving forward. As you approach each of these different modules moving forward, you want to look at that in the context of your specific type of anxiety. Which areas are hard for you? Which areas are neutral? Which areas are actually pretty easy? You want to take that knowledge, combine it with the knowledge that you're gaining from these modules, and together that can really facilitate you kicking anxiety's ass. So that's it for this particular lesson. Definitely take a look at the links that I'm including below. There's going to be a guide there to teach you about the different types of anxiety disorders that there are. If you're not ready to dive into all that yet, that's fine. Just print it off or keep it in a folder and save it for another time. But again, that's going to help you understand what areas are similar, which areas are different from your experience. And then there's also a tool to help you understand what your current level of anxiety is, just to get your head on straight about the whole thing.